Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent are returning generals Dan Greenfield. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
And fellow network all-star Sean M. Myers. Hi, Sean.
At ease, Kelly.
Do my best. Thank you both for coming back, fellas. You know, when I a couple of years ago when I started combining people, I didn't necessarily know that I was forming comedy teams, but I guess I have with the Dan Greenfield, Sean Myers, because you guys requested to do the shows together again, and we had such a great time. So now you're back again. So I appreciate it very much. So thanks for being here again.
Sure. This is an audio podcast, but right now I have the emoji with the heart in my eyes.
And I'm there you go, man.
Martin and Lewis, Abbott Costello, and Greenfield.
There you go.
So,
there you
go. Well, like as your rankings suggest, you've both been on the show many, many times. So we don't need to get into the origin stories. We could jump right into the episode. It's episode 8 from season 8, Private Finance. The original air date was November 5th, 1979, written by Dennis Koenig and directed by Charles S. Dubin. Wounded arrive, and one of the patients, Corporal Eddie Hastings, has an odd request. He demands that before he goes in for surgery, Hawkeye promise that the contents of his money belt go to his parents if he doesn't make it. Hawkeye, concerned about the young man's injuries, doesn't really take him seriously, but Hastings insists. Hawkeye agrees. During OR, Hastings' injuries are so severe it requires both Hawkeye and BJ to work on him to no avail. Hastings dies on the table. Afterwards, Klinger follows up with the doctors about Hastings. Hawkeye and BJ are depressed over losing him. But they're snapped out of that when Klinger reveals that Eddie has just over $8,000 in his belt, a veritable fortune, and all of it in American currency, not military scrip, which probably means it was gotten illegally. Hawkeye can't believe that, since Hastings looked like a clean-cut, all-American boy. They decide to look into it with some of Hastings' comrades in post-op. They're shocked to hear the mask when told Hastings has died. Oh yeah, who got him? Their side or ours? Turns out, according to them, that Hastings was a crook, cheating everyone he could right and left. If you owed him money, he thought nothing of getting some local Korean leg breakers to force you to cough up. Now Hawkeye is stuck with what to do with the money. SRO is to return it to I-Corp, but Hawkeye wants to fulfill the promise he made and return the money to Hastings' parents. But since it is such a huge wad of cash, he has to write a very carefully worded letter to them trying to explain it. After a bunch of false starts, Hawkeye puts a letter together and he runs it by Father Mulcahy, who's impressed with the results. A few weeks later, everyone is having a drink at the O Club. Hawkeye comes in with a letter from Hastings' parents, who write that they heard about their son's activities in Korea and are not interested in keeping the money. They return it to Hawkeye to give to someone there. Hawkeye is frustrated, still stuck with the money, and not knowing what to do with it. Colonel Potter, Margaret, and Klinger get the bright idea of giving some of it to a local mother and daughter who turned to Klinger for help, so they have enough money to travel south to Busan and get away from the war. With some money left over, Hawkeye, BJ, and Winchester, and Klinger all argue over who to give the rest of the money to. Hawkeye decides he'll split it up, giving a little bit to everyone. That makes everyone happy. And they toast a drink in Eddie's honor. All right. I did barely mention the side plot, which is what actually the episode opens with. It's a Klinger-related side plot, and we'll get into that as we go on. But Dan, I want to start with you before we get into the breakdown. Overall thoughts on Private Finance?
Deeply mediocre. I'm not going to be unkind ever to this show. I mean, I think that the worst MASH episode, and this is by nowhere near that conversation, is still better than most other TV shows. And so I'm just going to say that at the outset. I'm not going to bother to repeat that. But I felt while watching it that it was starting to show that season 8, later season MASH cracks. It was a little pat. I don't think that it did anything particularly special. It was a fine episode, but it was just an episode. It was just however many episodes they ended up doing. I know you know that number off the top of your head, Rob, but
24.
I forget. 20, yeah, right. And I just think that it's fine. It's fine. And there are a couple of like weird 1970s TV type things in there that we'll get to that, you know, in terms of the casting especially. But it was, I think it was okay.
Okay, interesting. So, Sean, what about you?
I am probably maybe like 1% of a higher opinion of the episode than Dan. Kind of like, and I literally said, you know, like this probably in terms of MASH would be maybe like a 7 out of 10 for me, but a MASH 7 is a regular TV show 9 or 10.
Yes.
Yeah, so you're grading on a curve when it comes to MASH.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure we'll get into this. There are things that happen in this episode that kind of have to happen because it's a TV show and you have to have a plot. But the funny thing is, and I was going to say this for a little bit later, but so when I started, a lot of times when you watch MASH, I don't look at the title because like I want to be surprised at like what episode this is coming up. And usually like within the first couple beats, oh yeah, that's right. This is the one where they da 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 da. Oh, this is the one where Father Mulcahy has to. I have no. I have the box set. I've watched the box set 3 times at least. Not to mention all the times I've watched MASH in syndication and first run. I have no memory of this episode whatsoever. I was
Wow.
genuinely surprised all the way through because I don't remember it, which probably isn't a great
Was going to say it
thing.
speaks for itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say, when we get into it, there are kind of like two particular story points where they zigged when normally like a normal show would have zagged, and I'll talk about those when we get to it, but that's my feelings about it. How about you,
Okay.
Rob?
All right. This is one of those ones. I've said this numerous times. I'm not a huge fan of the ones where the A plot and the B plot are just two totally separate ideas. Now, they do join them together at the end, which I like, but I always find when the show is heavy A plot, light B plot, or vice versa, it just feels like they had kind of two half-formed ideas that couldn't fill 24 minutes, so they sort of just stitched them together. And those are just the ones where I just feel they just, as you say, Dan, like the cracks are showing a little. Now, of course, they did that in other episodes. They did that way back in like seasons 2, 3, and 4, and those some of the greatest seasons of television ever produced. So it's not necessarily an indicator of weakness. It's just my personal preference of, okay, now we're going to go to this one. All right, now we're going to go to this one. That said, I really like the main plot, the private finance plot, and we'll get to it. As you mentioned, Sean, it takes a zig that I did not expect when I first watched it. So, and again, we'll get to all that. So, okay. So the episode opens in the O Club with Klinger talking to two of his pals, and he's telling one of these, as we know, Klinger is a world-class fabulist storyteller, and he's telling the story about how he had basically like a game-winning hit, and one of the guys says, "No, you know, oh, I know it was a homer to hit the game, a homer to win the game." And of course, Klinger thinks he's getting like making it sound more, you know, believable. But he's like, "No, Homer, it wasn't a wise guy. It was a stand-up triple, and then I stole home." Just like I love that. I love that the like the lie is meant to make it sound more plausible, and it's even more ridiculous. So I do like that, I have to say, because you know, just Klinger's just that kind of guy. Like, you know, he's not, I don't know, he's not lying, but he's like bullshitting, which is kind of two
Yeah,
different things a
the
little
tall
bit.
tales.
Yeah, he's
Yeah.
telling tall tales, which is fine. It's
Yeah.
very
It's
charming.
bar talk.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. It's bar talk. So one of the guys that he's talking to is named Vitello. He's played by the actor Philip Sims. He was on shows like Barney Miller, Moonlighting. He's in the Gong Show movie, so there's a credit. one of the other guys is an actor named Mark Harrison, who was on shows like Simon and Simon, Remington Steele, and he's in the TV movie Run Till You Fall, directed by Mike Farrell and starring Jamie Farr. So they would end up working together on that TV movie. I think that came out in like 1986. Then all of a sudden, a young girl comes in dressed to the nines, and we see the camera pans down her body, and we see that she's standing on these high heels and she's wobbling because she obviously has no idea what she's doing. And we could see that she is incredibly young, but has painted herself to look older. And she tries to proposition another one of the GIs. That actor is Denise Kumagai. She plays Oksan. She was a semi-regular on Night Court. She's on shows like Gilmore Girls. She's in a movie, a Burt Lancaster Vietnam movie called Go Tell the Spartans, which is actually a pretty good movie. She propositions a guy named Crosetti. There's so many credits right here. In the beginning, got a lot of actors. Joey, played by a guy named Joey Pinto, who I looked up his credits. He's in Batman Returns. I don't know what he plays in Batman Returns, but he's in Batman Returns. He's in Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. So good for him. And in Casino, he plays a character named Stabbed Gambler. So
I guess we know what happened
I guess you know what happened to him in
Why would you
Casino.
name your son Stab?
Why would you name him? It's like what's his name? Lou Gehrig getting Lou Gehrig's disease. You know, how did he not know that was going to happen? So anyway, this young girl tries Oak Sun Lee, Klinger knows her, and he's like, Oak Sun Lee, is that you? And Crosetti, of course, has her sit down because, as the show has shown, not everybody at the 477th, or at least not everybody who wanders through the O Club, or not the O Club, excuse me, Rosie's Bar, not the O Club, Rosie's Bar, is not on the up and up, because this girl is clearly a minor, and he's taking that to paw all over her. And luckily, Klinger, being a good guy, stands up and he puts his hands on his hips and he basically threatens to knock Crosetti out. It's another thing I love about Klinger, right? He's not a big guy. He's a small guy. He's probably 5'5", 5'6", and yet he is always willing to punch people's lights out if he has to, whether it's Zale or other people. And I like that about Klinger. I like his bravery here, that he's willing to do this.
Well, that's from growing up on the streets of Toledo, which are the stories, actually. Even though he has tall tales, I always believed that he was a pugnacious street kid. That I always think that always rang true to me. That was just how that was the neighborhood that he grew up in, so that he was a scrapper. But he was also probably the kind of guy who, bit a guy in the leg, if that's what it took to take him to, you know what I mean, to use anything. Which, by the way, I have a very quick side note. You mentioned, and I know this is a weird coincidence, you mentioned Lou Gehrig's disease, but the character Crosetti, by the way, is a reference to old Yankee shortstop in the 30s and 40s.
Of
Because you know
course,
that
of
the
course.
history of, MASH has a history of using ball player names
Yep.
for throwaway characters. And Frankie Crosetti actually played with Lou Gehrig. So there you go.
Oh, wow. I had no
Yeah,
idea.
he was the
Okay.
shortstop when the year then he'd come up in the early 30s and retired in the mid 40s. He was replaced by Phil Rizzuto. But
Wow. Okay.
he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's a Hall of Famer. But anyway, I digress.
I know that Ken Levine loved to name so many of the people after
Right.
old baseball
And
players, so that makes
Thad
total sense.
Mumford too. And Mumford, of course, had been a Yankees bat boy. So I mean,
Oh, I didn't know that.
oh
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
that's cool. All right. So, Crosetti, of course, is drunk off his ass, and he talks about he hasn't beaten anybody up in a week. And he even says, bye-bye, Klinger. And he throws this ridiculously wide punch that virtually anybody could duck out of the way of. And he falls on the floor. And I love that Klinger's retort is, let that be a lesson to you, which it's just like, I love that, right? It's just like he got away with not having to get hit. So I think that's great. And I love, by the way, in the background, you see Nurse Kelly, and she's smiling.
Yeah.
Ear to ear, because of course she dated Klinger in a previous episode. We saw that, but I just like that. I don't know. Everyone's just kind of like, just find this all very funny to watch to watch this go on. So Klinger brings Oak Sun Lee outside, and she's dressed in this red outfit, which is a color we don't generally see on MASH. So she really pops under the frame as she's standing there, and he is like, what are you doing? And she's like, I didn't do anything. You stopped me. And he's like, you bet I stopped you. I'm not going to let you ruin your life. And then she talks about that her family needs money. And he says, well, we're not making enough money on at the laundry. So then Klinger, of course, being an incredibly generous guy, reaches into his pocket and starts handing her some money. And of course, that's in an opportune moment, because right at that moment, Oak Sun Lee's mother comes by. She is played by Shizuko Hoshi. This is her fourth MASH. She played Rosie, the other Rosie, in Mad Dogs and Servicemen, the season three episode. So here she's not playing Rosie, but she's doing a scene right outside of Rosie's bar.
Or
And
Free
she,
Rosie.
Yeah, the all there too, Rosie. And there were three Rosies over the course of MASH, Earth One, Earth Two, and Earth X or something, Rosie. And of course, she doesn't really speak English, and she misunderstands, and she thinks that Klinger is propositioning her daughter, because of course her daughter looks like she's kind of in ready to be propositioned, and she starts attacking Klinger with a broom. And I'm wondering, Sean, is this the kind of thing you were talking about where stuff happens because it has to? Because I feel like Oaksun Li, just tell your mother, just straighten it out. Like, instead of dragging this out for 12 minutes, just tell her. But she doesn't do that.
So that is part of it. Although, when I was rewatching it today, and I'll get into that in a little bit, she actually does say that she told her mom that nothing happened. I did nothing. You stopped me. Yeah, like she does tell, I guess, Potter that she told her mom that nothing happened, but the mom doesn't believe her. So that
I
part's
guess.
kind of taken care of. But in terms of the mother going after Klinger with like the pitchfork. So
The broom at this
the
point.
broom
The
at the
broom, I'm sorry, the
first
broom.
versus the
They
broom,
save
yeah.
the pitchfork.
Yes. I think I've probably said this before. So when I do MASHcast, I watch an episode three times. Like I'll watch it just to watch it. And then the second time I take notes. And then the third time, usually on the day we record, I'll rewatch it just to cement it. So the first two times I watched it on my DVDs, and I love the DVD. I've said this before. I love the DVDs because you can play it without the laugh track, and that's my preferred way. Even though that wasn't the original way it was presented, I do like watching it that way with MASH. Now, however, because of time and what's going on and stuff like that, I had to watch the episode today during my lunch break. So I took my brought my iPad in, watched it on Hulu, and on Hulu you have the laugh track. And I will say, the mother going after Klinger with the broom, with the laugh track, does play much better than it does without the laugh track.
Okay, fair enough.
It does lighten the mood a little bit.
It is very broad and very silly, which again is meant to be a contrast to the main plot, which we're gonna get into in a moment. And so we hear, and you're right, that she does say, "I did tell my mother didn't believe me," but I don't know. Like, come on, maybe try a little harder. It's like, no, he really, in fact, this other guy propositioned me and Klinger stopped him, but okay, whatever. So we hear the choppers come. And for once, that makes Klinger happy because that means he gets to run away from all of this. And then she manages to hit him with the broom while he's standing there waiting for the choppers to come in. So now we're on the compound and we're seeing all the doctors working on triage. And Margaret is trying to tend to this one guy. And we'll see that that is Corporal Hastings.
And
And
actually,
he.
let me back up just a second.
Sure.
You always talk about how television's not a director's medium and that kind of thing, but there is like a great kind of like, I guess, sweeping crane shot coming into the compound. And yeah, MASH didn't do like a lot of flourishes like that. So that really like stuck out to me, just like how it comes down and you see a someone on the litter in the foreground, and then there's kind of someone like in mid shot, and the person in the mid shot is the person who speaks first, and then it brings you into the person at the bottom of the frame. And I was
Well,
really impressed with that shot. I really liked that a lot.
it is set up in the end of the previous scene too, because when the choppers, when she starts going after him with the broom, the camera does pull back or cuts too. And you see Klinger full on, and he's like looking up to the sky, going, "Thank you." And then she whacks him, but it's an obscured shot. And I don't know if this is intentional. I don't believe in anything being unintentional when it comes to stuff like this. But Klinger's midsection is obscured, and she whacks him. And I wonder if they're implying that she whacks him in the nuts, because the way he doubles over, because they don't show it. But the way he reacts says, "Oh, okay." But again, it's also an upshot, and so the transition is to another upshot that sweeps back down into the camp, and then he comes running in from the side. So yeah, it is really cool.
Dan, it's that kind of highbrow analysis of the show
I
that
tell you,
I always have
I
you
could
on
have
every
used a
year
different
for.
term if you wanted. She broke his onions. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, Sean, I agree. Like it's, the MASH directors, especially like a Charles Dubin who directed like 70 mashes, probably was doing anything he could to kind of just throw in a little piece of something. And
Flourish.
well, actually, I'll something like that's going to come up in a second. But this, yeah, you're right. It starts way higher than it normally would, and that's just a little extra effort. You could have just put the camera right at the medium length and just go from there. But they don't do that. They actually kind of come in, and we see this guy is thrashing, and he's kind of not letting Margaret take care of him. And then Hawkeye comes down, and he says, "Let me try and talk to this guy." And the actor playing Eddie Hastings is named Mark Kologi. He has one other credit, an episode of The Incredible Hulk, and that is and that is it. And I have said this since the show started. I don't understand how Hollywood works, that you can get this le like A, you land a MASH at the height of its popularity, which is sort of like, to use another baseball metaphor, kind of like, your first game and you're pitching in a World Series. You land a MASH and you get a significant role. I mean, he's not in the episode that much, obviously, because he's going to die on the table. But nevertheless, the episode is about him and how, like, you do one Hulk and that's it. Like, you never get at any other gig. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what happened. IMDb doesn't list a death date, so I don't know whether he's still around or not. Maybe he isn't, but I'm just amazed that, like, you can land your first credit is MASH, and that doesn't do more for you. That doesn't at least get you on a Columbo and a Heart to Heart and a this or that. I'm just kind of amazed by that.
I think there are probably like as many actors as you talk about that are as many different stories. Some
I
people
guess so.
probably were hoping and praying for that next big break and it never happened. Some people were too high-minded to take that role and they didn't get another role. Some people just, oh man, this is not for me. I don't like this at all. I'm going back to Peoria. I think as many different people as you talk about, I think that's as many different stories.
I guess so. It just seems amazing. I would. It just feels weird that, like, your first credit is like one of the biggest shows on television. I feel like you'd lead up to that. You were like, "Oh, I was the third guy on a police woman episode. I didn't have a line, but I'm in it." And then I got this, and now I got a MASH. But no, you late. Your first gig is a MASH. Like, holy jeez, And then, like I said, one episode of Hulk, and that was it for Mark Kologi. So we don't really even know what happened to him. So anyway, Hawkeye, Hawkeye's sort of like, "Well, why won't you let me look at your wound? You're really hurt." And Hastings is like, I don't want you to look under there." And Hawkeye says, "Nothing I'm going to see is going to surprise me." And then there's a pause, and he looks down, and he's like, "Hastings, you surprised me," because of course, it is a money belt. I have never had the need for a money belt, unfortunately, despite my reputation as a Richie Rich. I've never had enough money to need to put it in a special belt and
That's because
tie
your
carried
bodyguards
around.
protected you.
Yeah. So, Hawkeye grabs the money belt and pulls it off Hastings and hands it and is about to hand it over. And they pick him up. And, he's sort of saying, Hastings says, "Promise you're going to give this to my parents." And Hawkeye's kind of like, yeah, whatever, whatever. And they lift up the litter and he yells, "Hold it. I mean it. I'm not going anywhere till I get that promise." And Hawkeye finally says, "Okay, all right, whatever." And they realize they got to get him in immediately because he's hurt very, very severely. So then he hands the money belt over to Klinger. And then Hawkeye talks to Beej a little bit about triage.
Now,
And then, oh.
this is where the story zigged when I thought it was going to zag. Because as soon as he handed it to Klinger and Klinger runs off, I'm like, oh, the money's going to go missing. It's going, you know,
Oh,
what's going to
okay.
happen? Someone's either going to steal it. It's going to go missing. Maybe whatever, an animal eats it or whatever. Maybe
Damn goat again.
that might have been more a radar story, but. Like that's where I thought this was like zigging and zagging. Like the fact
Okay.
that the money stays around and is the point of the story, that part surprised me. And again, it shouldn't have surprised me because I know I've seen this episode 3 times before, but I was genuinely surprised the first time I saw it 2 or 3 days ago.
Okay, fair enough. It is very casual, right? Because they don't know how much money's in there. and he's just handing it to Klinger, and you know, maybe Klinger drops it, maybe Klinger's got a million other things to do.
Right. Yeah.
Now you're talking about, you know, kind of fancy directorial flourishes. There's another one coming up right after they all start to run inside. Instead of cutting and then opening again in the OR, they do a whip pan. I had to watch this several times because it kept going by so fast that I wasn't sure of what I was looking at. But as BJ and Hawkeye start running towards OR, they do a whip pan. And then they do another whip pan, and all of a sudden we're in OR. And that's just not anything MASH did a whole lot of whip pans. They normally just cut. And again, I don't know why Charles Dubin felt that was necessary, but it, you know, I've seen this episode 1,000 times, and I don't know how many times I've not noticed it. And then I went, wait, that actually isn't a cut. It's a whip pan. Okay. All right. Sure. Charles S. Dubin. Okay. That's fine. We're in OR, and Hawkeye and BJ are working on Hastings, and things are not going well. They talk about how much blood he's losing. Margaret is playing anesthetist. I don't know if I say that correctly. Things go really poorly, and basically Hastings dies on the table. Now, I like this episode a lot, and I actually like this plot line quite a bit. I probably like this episode more than either one of you guys do. That said, there is a line coming up that is one of the worst lines MASH has ever had. I think you all know what I'm talking about. Dan, you're laughing. Do you know what line I'm referring to?
Just to hear you say those words is what's making me laugh.
Okay.
So what's the line?
Okay. So after Hastings dies, and BJ says, you know, Hawk, he keeps trying, keeps doing the chest compressions. And, you know, well, Margaret says, we've lost him, doctor. Hawkeye keeps going. And then BJ says, it's over, Hawk. It's over. And then the camera slowly, Margaret says, we did everything we could. Hawkeye says, I know. Then they zoom in on Hawkeye, and he says, when is anyone going to find a cure for the common war? That's a terrible line. I'm sorry. That is a terrible. That is the kind of line you write when you're making fun of MASH for its self-seriousness.
Yes. But see, this is also a scene. And again, maybe it's because you see so many of these scenes and you're annoyed to it. But how many times do you see? And again, I maybe by this time in the series, I start to get a little jaded, because how many times do you see Hawkeye throw everything but the kitchen sink to save a guy, and it's all theatrical, and it's all very, and that scene to me has a been there, done that quality. And again, I know that's the show. I know that's part of the show. I know that that's what happens. But when I watched it last night, and I watched it cold for the first time in a long time, I was like, everything felt predictable. You know, whereas Sean, you said you had no memory, so a lot of it was a surprise. You know, once I remember, because I got to tell you, when I didn't know it by name, but when I put it on last night, nobody knew. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, it's this one. And so maybe because I knew what was coming, maybe because I knew. It just felt like, I don't know, a lot of the episode felt like it was relying on MASH tropes as opposed to really breaking new ground. And I know that that's not really a fair criticism, because you got 20 some odd episodes a season. It's not like now where you have 6 episodes for a season and then you have to wait a year and then, you know,
right.
It was a different, there's a whole different environment back then. And I get that you had to have it. I do consider this a quote unquote filler episode. But I found, I thought that scene lacked the drama that a lot of those typical scenes have had in other episodes. There was something about it that felt paint by numbers.
Okay, fair enough.
The funny thing is, I actually think I'm a little bit more forgiving of that line, the cure for the common war.
Okay.
Now, however, wait, I'm going to back it up a little bit. The way it's presented here in this episode, like you said, like, you know, everything goes quiet and then the camera goes in. I think that's what makes it, for me, that's what makes it kind of like, ugh. Like if it would have been the next scene where Hawkeye and BJ are sitting down and Potter comes in. Like, I think then if it would have just been tossed off, like, oh, when are they going to find a cure for the Common War? Like that,
Okay,
and back
yeah,
and forth,
that's
and then
fair.
go. I think
Yes.
that would have been okay. But yeah, like the, when will they find a cure for Common War? I think that's what makes it such like a, oh man.
Womp womp.
Did either one of you guys ever watch Futurama
No.
with any
On
regularity?
occasion. Not with
They
regularity.
did an episode of Futurama that featured a MASH parody of a robot hospital, and they even had Suicide is Painless, and they parodied the opening shot panning down of the hospital, and they have a surgeon who was a robot surgeon working on another robot, and he's got a martini glass and he sounds like Alan Alda, and he makes a joke, and then he leans over and there's a toggle switch on his robot body and he toggles from comedy to maudlin. And he toggles it to maudlin, and then he says something like "cure for the common war." And it's like I was like, I remember watching that going, fair, fair. Okay, you got me, Futurama. Like, all right. And I mean, clearly the show loves MASH because it was so lovingly parodied that, and I don't mean to be too harsh. It's just that it's to me that, and I agree, Sean. I think that yes, had it been maybe tossed off in the following scene, it might have landed better. But there's just something about the push in is just like, oh Lord, every okay, all right. You don't want to, you don't never want the show to sound too written that a human being would not say that thing, and you're just like, real, so okay, I don't want to keep going on and about it. I do like this storyline, but that one line is the one, oh yay. And I as I say, I think if Alan Alda can't sell it, it's not a good line. Right. I mean, if Alan Alda can't put it across, then there's something wrong with it. So anyway, Hastings is dead. Now we're in the scrub room, and Hawkeye and BJ are looking very despondent, obviously, because they're sort of like, really affected by losing this kid. Winchester looks kind of disheveled. Klinger comes in and he says, I heard Hastings didn't make it. And he says, that's too bad. He had a lot to live for. And then BJ kind of angrily says, they all do. And then Hastings says, and excuse me, Hastings, Klinger says, well, Hastings had a little more. I tried to put his cash in my little file box, and then he whips it out, but it wouldn't fit. And it's these two giant stacks of cash. Like it's a prop from a Batman 66 episode. That was just for you, Dan. And and we see that it's just this giant pile of cash. BJ says this must be 3,000-4,000, and then Klinger says $8,873, which would equivalently be like 80 grand now. So that is an absolute fortune.
More than that. About, well, I
More?
mean, at least, I guess it depends on which calculator you're looking at,
I
but I
always it
also.
always comes out as like just 10 times. Usually
No,
it's 10
I looked
times.
it up. It was over
Oh
$100,000.
my God. Yeah. So that is just right. I mean, that's just an unbelievable amount of money. And we see Potter is rifling through it all, and he says, he says every bill has a president, so there must not be any Ben Franklins in this pile, although Potter just doing an aphorism, it's fine. And of course, then they point out, well, wait a minute, what is he doing with real money? I'm paid in military scrip. And then they realize, well, okay, that means there's something, as Potter says, rotten in Wei Zhang Bu. And Hawkeye doesn't buy it. Hawkeye's like, that kid was so clean that he squeaked. And Potter's like, it doesn't matter. We got to lock this bonanza up in the safe. And I love that Klinger goes, do you mind if I fondle it for a little while?
Now this kind of is where I was talking about like this stuff has to happen for the plot. Like why does Hawkeye think this guy is so
There you go.
virtuous? Like
Yes.
it would have been one thing if they would have had some kind of thing like where like the guy's bleeding out and I understand that this doesn't go with the character of Hawkins, but like if he would have said like no, Doc, take care of that guy first. He saved a bunch of guys. Or,
Love
something
your
like that.
voice acting in this one, Sean.
Thank you.
Acting.
Brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, like if he would have done like anything or said anything to be like, maybe it's like his, he wants the money to go to his parents, and that's what impressed upon Hawkeye, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I don't really get Hawkeye's you know, fervent, not devotion, but like belief that this man is above reproach. All he did was see him laying there on the stretcher, like that's it. So that's kind of like my thing of where, okay, so he has to believe in this kid so that this story can go on through the rest of the episode.
Okay.
That's I'm right with you, Sean. I agree 100%. And that tripped me up too, but for because it's like I felt like Hawkeye in this episode got hit with a face full of callow. You know, he just all of a sudden was this sort of like he hadn't been there for 8 years, let alone the two that, you know, in reality of the Korean War. But it's like he's seen everything by now. Why is he shocked? You know, this is something that he would have shrugged off and go, ah, geez, here we go. Seen this before. And again, I don't mean to be unkind, but there is something about, I mean, Hawkeye is nothing if not jaded himself. You know, I mean, he has his hopefulness, which is what drives him. But he's a very, you know, he's got a very dark and dim view of what's going on around him. And he has seen a lot of stuff. So it did feel like, yeah, I mean, that's almost like I could have seen like a BJ in season 4 kind of response, you know, where he just got there and he just didn't understand the things that were going on. And Hawkeye, who's seen it all, is sort of just shrugging it off. And again, so that's where I was saying earlier where I felt there was some 1970s TV work going on, because everything, you know, everything has to move at a certain pace, and you know that they have to wrap up the story. Now, one of MASH's great gifts is that it frequently didn't wrap up the story in a way that you thought. It didn't give you a set. It gave you an ending, but it didn't give you a happy ending. It didn't give you one of its strengths, and is that there was a lot of bittersweet and a lot of tragedy. But this just felt like everything was being ginned up to me. So that, and then when you go to the next, you know, I don't want to jump ahead. Go ahead.
Not to rewrite the episode, because what the hell do I know? But I will say, like, maybe one way they could have done that is instead of Hastings asking it for the money to go to his parents, he asks it to go to just his dad. And that Hawkeye feels a kinship with a guy who just has a dad. Because that's what he has. He's very close with his dad, you know, something like that. You know, I love my dad. You know, just something that it's a one to one that Hawkeye is taken in, you know, taken in by a little bit, you know, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. Again, what the hell do I know? It's easy for me to 50 years later to rewrite an episode that they had to crank out when they were doing 24 of these in a year. You know, I mean, come on. So anyway, they decide they're going to look into it. And Winchester says, well, if you want to look into it, talk to his comrades in post-op. So then we get another scene in Klinger's office where Oak suddenly, as you mentioned, Sean, she says, I tried to tell my mother that you didn't do anything wrong. She doesn't believe me. The mother shows up with the pitchfork. She's now escalated from broom to pitchfork. She starts going after Klinger. Potter comes in and almost gets stabbed. And he's like, yeah, explain this to me, what's going on. And then there's this kind of weird thing where Klinger says, Mrs. Lee thinks I was messing around with his daughter, this child. And Potter then grabs the pitchfork and goes after Klinger, which is kind of like, okay, like, all right. It's just meant to be a gag. And then he says, you're swarthy, aren't you? Hot-blooded and all that? Yeah. This is an HR violation.
Seriously. Yeah.
See, I think as often was the case with Harry Morgan, that Potter is the secret weapon of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I think so much of his reaction to what's going on around him and his attempts to try to to resolve it are hilarious, and his timing is great. And you know, this scene is a good example. No, and actually, just going back to the previous scene, just very quickly, you know, while they're all very frustrated and upset about the death, there's a very Potter moment where he turns to them and he says, "You know, we saved 22 today," and he wasn't being he wasn't being dismissive.
Right.
But that's leadership. Mm-hmm. That's actually getting your troops back in line, getting their heads back in the game, and understanding that this is what happens. And I thought that was a nice little character moment. And then we switch over to this bit, and then he's all comedy. and broadly so. And he sells it. His physical reaction, the way he, I just think he's, and from this point forward, for me, he's my favorite part of the episode.
He manages to, I mean, coming out of a lot of other people's mouths saying, I kind of believe that you might have sexually assaulted an underage girl because you're swarthy would
Right.
be so offensive. But
Oh,
because it comes
sure.
out of Harry Morgan's mouth, you just kind of
Right.
roll your eyes like,
It
okay,
sounds
Grandpa. All
wholesome.
right. Okay. All right.
Okay, great.
All right. Let's settle down. But okay. And then he even says to the mother, oh, I have a daughter. If he ever laid a hand on her, I'd be, whatever. So, okay. So, it's all played very broadly, but it's okay. So then we're in post-op, and Hawkeye and BJ talk to two of Hastings' comrades. One of them is just simply unnamed. He's just listed as Soldier. He's played by an actor named James Emery. He was in the movie My Blue Heaven. He's on a TV show. He had guest spots on TV shows like Riptide and a show called Black's Magic, which featured in the cast Hal Linden and Harry Morgan. The other actor is a guy you've seen in a million other things. I'm always fascinated just the vagary, as you were kind of talking about, John, the vagaries of a Hollywood career. How one person can go on to do very little, and then someone else with barely any more screen time goes on to a long career. So the guy laying down, the African American soldier, is played by played named Dolan, is played by an actor named Art Evans. He was born in 1942, passed away just last year. He's been in 1,000 movies. He's in Die Hard 2. He's in The In-Laws. He's in Tough Turf. He's in the 1974 movie Claudine. He was in Fright Night. The minute you see his face, you go, oh, that guy. He's just, oh, you always played cops generally, but he had a long, long movie career, 25th down build. But nevertheless, the guy kept working up until when he passed away. So Hawkeye and BJ talk to them, and they tell him that Hastings died. And the two guys look at each other and they say, well, who got him, their side or ours? And that's the act break. Hell of an act break. Right? Hell of an act break.
It's a really good line.
Yeah. So then we come back right to that scene, and Hawkeye and BJ are like, I want to be clear. Hastings is dead. And they start explaining why they don't like Hastings. Now, this is something I go on and on about when I talk about syndicated edits. Most of the time, I'm just being pedantic, but in this episode, it's significant because in the syndicated version that I saw for many, many years slash decades, for whatever reason, the editor of the local syndicated version chose to take almost this entire scene out. And it is only let they only left behind the line where Dolan says, then he started hanging around with some of the crumbs of the outfit. That's the only line they left. And you're kind of like, well, okay. Like
That's the
that.
ex that that's the exposition. I mean, that's the payoff of what the episode's about.
Exactly. And you're kind of like, well,
Yeah.
that's not that bad. But in the full episode that you see on the DVDs and on Hulu, they get into that Hastings was cutting corners and that Hastings was a shifty guy. And that if you owed money to Hastings, he would get locals to get your legs broken. So they go to this whole list of how what a bad guy Hastings was. And for some reason, the editor in my local market decided to take all of that out when it's like you couldn't cut from the Klinger stuff.
Yeah,
That you left in,
I
you
would have
know?
taken out the mother going after Klinger so much. I would have
Yeah.
snipped those. Yeah.
Like, this is the meat of the episode, is that this guy was really bad. And this is where I'm talking, where I think the show zigs where it you think it would zag, is that it doesn't let Hastings off the hook. He was a bad guy. That's it. He wasn't misunderstood. He wasn't getting the money for a sick relative back home. He was just a crook. He was just a scummy crook. And I like that the show just lets that be. That's who Hastings was. He was a scummy crook. And I like that, like, that's why I like this episode as much as I do, because it's that's kind of I think a little unexpected. Like, okay, that's messy, and willing to show that not every U.S. soldier, not that audiences in 1979 didn't know this, but you know what I mean? But just, you know, I mean, again, if this was made in the 50s, soldiers would have been presented in a much more whitewashed way, but just, you know, willing to show that, yeah, some of these people were pretty unsavory. And so I like that. I like all that, but I'm flummoxed that the editor in my local market was like, nah, we don't need any of that. That's fine. Like,
yeah, that's crazy.
Really strange. And then Hawkeye is still kind of not believing it. And he says, you know, his face came right off of a Norman Rockwell cover. And BJ's like, well, maybe that was his cover. And I like that kind of BJ is one step ahead of Hawkeye in this, that he's kind of like, okay, this guy's clearly a crook. Yeah. And Hawkeye is still a little not bowing, but I kind of like that BJ's like, you know, clearly very comfortable with this idea of, now maybe is it because Hawkeye's the one that lost him on the table? Is it guilt? Is it that kind? Is that the reason why he's still hanging on to this long past when you think Hawkeye normally would?
That's a really good point about him losing him on the table. Mm. That adds a little bit, yeah.
Maybe I don't want to be the. I thought this was plot armor, and I thought that with also the really Hastings' death is the MacGuffin here, because really what it's about is getting Hawkeye to the point of his conflict, his internal conflict is how does he handle this? What do they do with the mummy? How does he communicate to the parents? And. So they need to, this is what, because they've got a plot to fill out to, you know, the way you were kind of saying before, Sean, is that I felt like they were stretching this aspect out with him so that it would lend the weight that was necessary for the scenes that followed of him trying to write the letter, of him talking with Mulcahy, of not knowing exactly what to do with the money, how to communicate with the parents. Does he need to, you know, follow through on his promise, given that this guy is such a, you know, was such a bad guy? And I think that's really where we get to what that A plot is really about. Mm.
Potter gets off the, we're in Potter, Klinger's office, and Potter gets off the phone with I-Corps, and he says, Hastings has no record against them, which I like. I like that they throw that in there, right? It gives you just enough of a, well, all right. You know, maybe he wasn't as bad. That would have been more cliche to be like, oh, yeah, he was arrested by the MPs 6 times for this. No. He didn't do any of that. And so Potter's like, well, we got to give the money to I-Corps. I love that Klinger is like, they'll just waste it. Let's not send it to I-Corps. It's great. And then Hawkeye says, you know, I promise to send the money back. And he says, come on, you know, what do we know about this kid? It's all we have is hearsay. And I love that they cut to Mulcahy and Potter kind of looking at him like, come on. And then he goes, fine, it's overwhelming hearsay. It's okay.
That's right. Divide. Yeah. Because it's also his acknowledgement that finally he's like, okay, all right.
All right. I'm with you.
Okay, yeah,
exactly. But then he finally turns and he says, Hastings was a little shifty. So what? He said his parents needed it. Let's send it to them. And I like that. I like that. That's like, okay, yeah, you know, he's dead. Like, the least we can do is send them this money, and Potter goes along with it. And I like all that. I like that Hawkeye's just like, yeah, all right. Well, and we're in a war. Like, everything is terrible. You know, you know, everything is bad. So Hastings cut some corners and maybe did some shady stuff. You know, whatever. And so they finally said, okay, we're going to make out a money order and we're going to send it to Hastings. And he says, the Hawkeye, you need to write a very carefully worded letter. And then we cut to the swamp and we see that Hawkeye is having trouble writing the letter. And then he has a great line where he says, how do I explain this? Eddie had a really good paper route, Asia, which that's a great line.
That's a great line.
Yeah. And I like, this reminds me of my group of friends, because then he says that, and then BJ says at the corner of 38th and Parallel, and Winchester says about the market, the black market, like how, like it's like a jazz combo where like they build on each other. Like me and my friends, like we'll have some dumb joke and then it goes from there, and then another joke on that and another joke on that. So I really like that part.
They're good at yes anding, right? They're good at improv. They're
Yeah,
yes
yeah.
and, yes and. But yeah, I love that joke. He had a great paper route. Asia. That's a great, great, great gag. So then Klinger comes in and he's dressed in various pieces of his old outfits. He's got like a kind of like a frock coat and then like a mixed, not a mixed stole, but kind of like a fur stole and a purse. And he's just trying to disappear. And of course, they're like, well, you're not exactly blending in because he's looking as loud as humanly possible. And he wants to hide in the swamp away from the mother, and they won't let him. And then he just begs and he basically hides under a blanket, and Hawkeye takes off because he can't concentrate. So then we cut to
With two
yeah,
things
go ahead.
about, so I keep interrupting. I'm sorry. Two
No,
things
no, no.
about this scene. The way Klinger is dressed reminds me of when E.T. is in drag, because he has like the
It
dress, he
does look
has
like
the
that,
boa, he has the
doesn't
hat.
it?
Like it does kind of remind me
That
of
was great. It does look, oh
E.T.
my
That's
God, it
good.
really does look like
That's
that.
good. And then the only other thing I wanted, or I should have ended with that because that was much better than what I'm going to say now. The other thing I like about so the scene in the swamp, that's the only time in this episode when Winchester says something mean or snarky or cutting down Hawkeye, and it's I forget it's you need three things to write the letter, but tact, class, or I forget what the three things.
Taste and yeah, something
Yeah,
like that. Yeah.
none of which you possess. But that's the only line during the whole episode that Winchester is kind of like biting or anything like that. And I like that. Like I actually wish that line wasn't in, just so I could have said, "Oh, did you notice that Winchester didn't say anything mean at all?"
I can't, once you mentioned the ET thing, I started going, wait a minute, did ET, was 20th Century Fox produce ET? Is this the same outfit? And like, no, that was not a Fox movie. So I'm like, okay, no. But I just love the idea that maybe this costume was sitting around the prop department, the costume department, and then they actually, it's literally the same outfit, but no, it can't be. But that's a great pull, Sean. It really does look like they have similar skin tones too, ET and Klinger. They really kind
I
of
think
look very
both
similar.
swarthy,
Both swarthy.
because he's down on his knees. Also, that I think that
He's
adds
down
to
on
it.
his knee. Right. Yeah,
Yeah,
totally.
sure.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I can't unsee that now. So we're in the mess tent, and we see that Hawkeye is working on draft after draft. This is me working on my Real Retro Cinema columns, and they're all the paper is all crumpled up. And when Mulcahy comes in, and for like the second time this season, the second time in just a couple of episodes, we get a great Mulcahy scene where he comes into the mess tent, and I'm referring to Period of Adjustment, where he gently schools Potter for Potter being so critical of Klinger not being able to replace Radar effectively. And here he's going to do it. He's not schooling Hawkeye, but Mulcahy, who often doesn't get as much to do, although of course the previous episode to this nurse doctor he had a lot to do, but he gets to come in and he gets to help Hawkeye in the way he knows how, because he's good at this. And he sits there and listens, and you know, he meant, you know, at one point he even says, nice touch. And it's a nice little moment. And then he even says, Hawkeye, I'm impressed. And Hawkeye's like, yeah. And he says, yeah. And he says, you know, and then he even says, you know, I always thought with your with you know, you would have made a fine priest. Which is a very, very nice thing to say. And I love that he gets this thing to do. He doesn't feature much in this episode, neither does Margaret, but he doesn't get much to do until she comes in a moment. But I don't know. I like Mulcahy as this sort of like wandering spirit in the camp who just sort of shows up and helps people and then disappears into the night or something. I don't know. It's a nice little moment for him that he gets to buck up Hawkeye and be like, no, this is actually pretty good.
Yeah, it plays right to the heart of his character. So it is. It's just a nice little. It is a one-off scene. It is critical to the plot, but it is nice, and it's just nice that Hawkeye listens and Mulcahy knows exactly the right thing to say. My only again is that I felt, maybe I take certain things for granted, but I didn't actually, I had a hard time believe, I guess really with a lot of this episode, I had a hard time suspending my disbelief about certain things. And one of them is, I don't think that it actually Hawkeye would have actually had that much trouble figuring out what to say. And again, I the plot armor, and again, I think I'm going to get off this soapbox because of the way the rest of that episode plays out. But again, it was one of those things that kind of took me out of the episode. And I was like, really, would Hawkeye really at this stage of his quote unquote career in Korea, would he not know how to handle this? But it does make for a nice scene nonetheless, and it's a really nice quiet moment between the two of them. And I also liked, Hawkeye's comment about, what did he say? I don't work Sundays or something like that. And,
Yeah, the only Latin I know is Xavier
I like that. Which I like that.
I love that.
Exactly. So I, but at this point now, I'm going to move on from this
I will say
approach.
though, I will say I it could be that Hawkeye is great at comforting people face to face, but when he has to
That's
put his
true.
thoughts down in writing, he can't do it because
That
he doesn't write death notices. That's not his job.
is really, really fair. Because and not to get too sidetracked, but in my career, I'm surrounded by writers, and so I take it for granted that people can just do. And then when I see that someone actually has a hard time with it, it always kind of surprises me a little bit. So that's fair.
I've experienced the reverse lately in that over the 2025, people hearing this in 2026, but over the course of 2025, I started doing these on-stage film introductions and I have to write them and then I write them and when you write it, it looks great. And then I stand up and I read it out loud and I'm like, oh no. And oh no. And it's just, it, when you look at, so I'm having the reverse
Interesting.
problem of like, oh, I can write this looks, yeah, this looks fine. And then you hear yourself say it and you go, oh no. And so, it could be that Hawkeye doesn't write death notices. He never has
Yeah,
to,
that's fair.
And he's also, should I mention that your son was a shifty knee breaker, I'm not gonna do that. So then we come back, come back to the other plot where Potter is going to talk to Mrs. Lee. We have a great line where Margaret says, I appreciate you asking me to come along. And he says, I don't recall saying you could come along.
That's why you have no problem.
I love that Margaret is going to do what Margaret wants to do, which is I love that. That's great. I continually love their dynamic that she just barrels over him, even though he's the commander. That's their relationship. So they go and they talk to Mrs. Lee, and she explains herself, and Potter tries to get Quan Lee to talk to her, and then kind of Margaret takes Mrs. Lee's side. And that's a recurring bit with Margaret, is that Margaret is always going to defend the woman. Now, I don't mean that in a bad sense, but that's Margaret's default is I'm going to defend the woman in this situation because I've been there and I know how poorly we're treated. And then she even says, I don't know, Klinger can be awfully strange sometimes. Poor Klinger.
I wonder. I know. Yeah, Klinger really gets it in this episode, and I don't wonder whether they brought him back into the dress just to remind us that that's the Klinger everybody kind of. And so her reference to him being really strange. I don't wonder if it was just like kind of like a subtle reference to that. But it is a great line. But I also like the way when she says it, you expect her to come to Klinger's defense, and she just completely shifts. And Potter's like, "You're not helping." It's like, and he's just like, now he's got to calm two people down, and he's just like at a loss. And I love how she goes, "This woman is heroic." And it is a great bit. And again, I like not only how she does it in her classic Margaret Way, but it's also his response to it and his reactions to it,
I love
where
that he
he's
gets
just completely like he's been blindsided.
frustrated and he goes, whose side are you on? And she says, well, there's two sides to every issue. And he says, yeah, you seem to be on both of them.
Yeah, that's a good line.
So finally, Quan Lee, you know, stands up and says, I needed the money. Klinger was trying to help me. Red Rosie's, he made me stop. Again, now why Mrs. Lee buys it this second time and not the first time, but okay, fine. And then, you know, Potter's like, okay, all right, you know, like, it's, you shouldn't do that, okay. And then so it seems like it's finally settled, okay. So then we cut to the O Club, and Mulcahy is playing a piano. We have the running joke that Mulcahy is a bad piano player. He's just not very good. He's just kind of plodding along. Poor Winchester has to sit there and listen to it, and we see it looks like it's almost like physically painful for him to hear this. So, Klinger is tending bar as if he doesn't have enough to do. And BJ and Margaret and Potter are there at the bar and they're having a drink. And he's celebrating that, you know, he says it's been 2 weeks since anyone tried to subdivide my skull. They talk about the money they're trying to raise for Mrs. Lee and her daughter to leave, and they're saying they don't really have very much. There's not much to collect. So then Hawkeye comes in and he mentions that he's got the letter from Eddie Hastings' parents. Now, we do have the line from Klinger saying, you know, basically in just a couple of weeks. So obviously this whole scene takes place several weeks across the time stream, which is funny, right? That's very, and kind of, you know, MASH did that sometimes, but you have to think about it's interesting that in 24 minutes, they're jumping ahead around this much in the characters' lives.
That was my issue about like how things happen just because they have to happen. Because like, even if it's 2 weeks, 2 weeks for a letter to go there and come back, because aren't they famously saying like how long the mail takes to get, that was one of my like, my issues with it, like how he gets this letter, and I guess maybe a death notice would they have been whatever, like overnighted or special delivered? Maybe that death notice would have been, maybe that's being generous, but like the parents' response back, I don't know that that would have been rushed 2 weeks.
Yeah,
but I always get the idea mail takes a long time here.
Yeah, I mean they could have made it a month; they wouldn't have to be 2 weeks or whatever. By the way. It's always frustrated me that this episode is called Private Finance and yet it was Corporal Eddie Hastings. Why not just make him Private Eddie Hastings? Why not? There's no point. There's no reason to make him a corporal. You can just make him a private and then it's literally Private Finance, but okay, whatever.
Maybe a corporal would have had more, I don't know, be able to do more bad things. And get
that
away
actually makes
maybe?
Sense. No, he had a little bit of seniority. Yeah, it makes sense.
Maybe. So Hawkeye's reading the letter from the parents and they say, you know, we heard about how Eddie was like over there. The money you sent us came from an Eddie we never knew. And we are a simple Christian family. And I like that the Hastings parents walk the walk, right?
Yeah,
I like that. That's a really nice little moment that they are like, yeah. Because, I mean, you know, maybe I say too much. If somebody sent me $100,000, I don't know. How much would I look into it? I don't know. I don't know.
That was another zigzag for me. I wasn't expecting this letter to get the money back.
It also pays off Hawkeye's faith in Eddie to begin with.
Yes.
You know, his disbelief of that this kid could be caught, you know, and again, a lot of shortcuts were taken in this episode, but it pays that off. It's like, okay, he actually was, and he was corrupted when he got to Korea. So, okay, that sort of underscores the earlier part of the episode and what Hawkeye was going through.
I mean, still that's life-changing money to send somebody, you know, and they turned it down.
I would love it if somebody sent me a check for $100,000.
Oh my God. You know, I mean, Patreon.com.
I wouldn't want it under those circumstances.
Right.
But I'd take it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of dough.
So anyway, and then they say, "You seem like an honest, trustworthy man." And I like that Hawkeye's like, "Well, all right." And I like that Mulcahy kind of like laughs a little, like, "Okay." And Hawkeye kind of running himself down. And then they say, "We are confident that you can find a way." And by the way, the letter, this part of the episode, I think this letter is very well written. We don't meet these two people, but they feel real the way it's written. This really lands quite impressively, I would say. And they say, "We think you'll be able to find a way to use Eddie's money to help someone over there. So we are returning it to you." And Hawkeye is like, "What am I, the community chest? What the hell am I going to do with this?" And then we get to Potter and Margaret smiling, and boom, our two plots are finally dovetailing, which, is always a thing I like. Now we have the next scene, and we see Potter saying, "Put that $500 in a safe place." Well, what are they doing with the remaining $7,900 or whatever? I mean,
Well,
well,
that's what,
obviously we're going to learn,
yeah.
but just when you first hear it, you're like, "They only gave him $500? $98,000." Like, okay. All right, you maybe could have given them, a little more, but okay. I mean, to these two, $500 is a fortune, is an absolute fortune. So, okay. So they're saying goodbye to Mrs. Lee and the daughter, and then she kisses Klinger, and Klinger kind of approaches Mrs. Lee kind of warily, and then he kisses her on the cheek, and then Mrs. Lee kind of gives him a little smack of like, "Okay, you're an all right guy," and that's the act break of our episode. So then we come back and we have Klinger and BJ and Winchester and Hawkeye in the swamp sharing a drink, and they are arguing what to do with the remaining money. And Klinger says, "We'll have a giant party, we'll buy Tokyo and have it delivered." And they all have their own pet causes. Winchester wants to give it to the Boston Symphony Orchestra, like they need it. And they're just kind of going back and forth. Now, before we get to the final literal, the final couple lines of this episode, I'm going to ask either one of you guys, if you had money to give to a charity, what would be your inclination? I'm just kind of curious what your personal tastes are. If you had money that was expressly, "Dan, Sean, please give this to a charity," what would you want to give it to? Would you want to give it to a bunch of places like they do? Is it one? Where are you guys at with that? Sean, please
Well,
start with.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sean.
So I have two answers. One is self-serving. The
Okay.
other is more altruistic. I would say give to your local library
Okay.
because we need it. Funding has been cut. And one of the best things about working at a library is you literally see the libraries helping people every day. It gives me a very good sense of accomplishment and like being happy in life because I can see the good that we are doing. So please give to your library. The other one, kind of related, I would say PBS. PBS
Okay.
does so much stuff. Like, even if the only thing PBS ever did was Sesame Street, that would be like 10,000 times a great thing, but they do so much more. So I would give to the library and PBS.
Right.
Now,
Good
there's
answers.
still a ton of other organizations
Sure,
that came
sure,
under
sure.
that.
But I'm just kind of curious of where your minds are at that. But Dan, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, Sean, I think both of those are great. I actually think that giving a little bit to the Boston Symphony would have been okay because I think any kind of support for the arts, I'm
Sure.
in favor of. And I think that even if it buys them a trombone or whatever it is, I think that works. I'm going to play the type. I have a lot of ideas on this of what I would do, but just keeping in character, I'd give certainly a portion of it to the Hero Initiative,
Okay.
which to your
All right.
non to your non-comics listeners is a
Yeah,
charity
explain what that is, yeah.
for it's a charity for indigent or people who are in financial trouble who are comic book creators who typically work without health care, typically work without any kind of safety net, and in some cases do so for decades. And it helps them out of jams as best that it can. And when when you see these people and these creative people who have given you that much entertainment and a lot of times very moving moments in your life, that's something I would want to pay back a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. For me, I would probably give it mostly to like animal charities. I care very much about animal welfare and
Local shelter for
local
sure.
shelters. They really, animal shelters really are able to do a lot with very little. So if I had that kind of money to give them where it would, ch like materially change what they could get done, I think that's what I would do. But so they had obviously no wrong answer. It was just, I'm just kind of curious where people land on that. So they argue about the, Hawkeye Klinger says the Red Cross, and then Hawkeye says, "What about the USSO?" And they're kind of yelling. And then actually, at one point, somebody yells, "What about the ASPCA?" Which is okay. I can't even tell which one of them says that, but okay, I'm very happy to see that represented. And then finally, Hawkeye says, all right, okay, enough. We give it to everybody." And everyone salutes that, and they salute Eddie with a Hawkeye salutes Eddie with a toast, a martini glass with his martini, and that is the end of our episode. So yeah, so that is Private Finance. I agree with both of you. There are parts of this that are, as you say, Dan, like subpar MASH, but a subpar MASH is still better than most other TV shows, either still today or less really ones airing then. But yeah, they also had 24 to do in a season. Nobody does 24 shows anymore,
No, it's
So
remarkable, and it's still entertaining. I mean, you don't get bored.
no.
Time goes quickly, and you have a lot of laughs. I mean, I know I've kind of taken the more, I don't want to say negative approach, but the more critical approach in this particular episode. But yeah, it's still, I mean, it's 25 minutes well spent.
Yeah. Like I said, it's I really do like the A plot, and even though it's got some deficiencies to it, it did, as we said, it took some zigs where I didn't expect it to, and I like that it's unresolved with Eddie. Eddie was just something happened to Eddie when he came over here. And I even if you really want to be complimentary or that's not the phrase I'm looking for. If you really want to be generous, you could say, well, Eddie was another casualty of the war ever before he ever got killed. Is that it poisoned what was probably, according to his parents, maybe they were fooled. Maybe Eddie was running stuff on the side wherever he was back in America. But whatever. Let's take the Hastings at their word and say Eddie changed when he got to Korea and had to fight a war, and that's a really sad thing. So that is a Private Finance, everybody. So. I want to thank you guys both for coming back. I really appreciate I really enjoy talking to both of you. And Sean, we'd love having you as part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network as well. I'm happy that you're going to be back doing podcasting on the regular with your regular co-host Paul Kahn. So thank you guys both for coming back. I want to ask
Well, thank
you,
you.
yeah, I want to, let's start with you, Dan. What's your favorite line or joke from this episode?
I don't have a favorite line, but I have a favorite gesture because it was the one thing in the episode that I was actually waiting for, and it's that payoff at the end when Klinger kisses the mom on the cheek, and her reaction to it. She doesn't say anything, but the way she kind of playfully slaps him, and she has this kind of bemused, kind of happy look, but because she's looked so fierce throughout the entire episode, and that facade cracks, and and she just makes a funny face, and I like that moment a lot.
I don't know, that it all counts. It could be a line, it could be a gesture, it could be anything. So, Sean, what about you?
My favorite is when Hawkeye is examining Hastings, and he's feeling around, and he's surprised. He sees like the money belt, and then he says, "You're hit right under your savings account." I like that.
I agree with both those moments. So for me, I have a little bit something different than we normally would do here, and that I just tell a little bit of a story for everybody. So the first podcast that I ever did long, not long, but before even the Fire and Water Podcast Network, even before the Fire and Water Podcast that I started with, Your Deemable Shag, which turned into the network. I did a podcast called the Aftermash Podcast, which was a audio commentaries on every episode of MASH, where I just played the episode, recorded an audio commentary over it, and I put it out as a podcast that you could listen along to. They're all gone. They're on a server that's no longer active. All the episodes are gone. And thank God, I can't imagine how badly they must have sounded. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. My microphone setup was terrible. They're probably very, very poor. But it was my first experiment in podcasting. And of course, naturally, I was like, oh, I want to start doing podcasting. Oh, let me do about MASH because it's like my favorite thing. So I was having a lot of fun doing these audio commentaries. And because, as I've said in other episodes, I'm frustrated that the MASH DVD set doesn't have any audio commentaries, not a one. And I still say, if I want to manifest things, if and when the show ever gets put out on Blu-ray, now that I've do audio commentaries professionally, I want to be hired to do some audio commentaries for the MASH Blu-rays. But that's another thing. Anyway, I did the show, and unbelievably, it actually got some listeners. People actually listened to it, and I got some nice comments from people. And so over time, I had people occasionally join me. Not much, but once in a while, I would have somebody join me, and we would do an audio commentary together. And one of the people that joined me was a friend of mine named Eric Miller. And I didn't know him. He was just a listener. He was a big MASH fan, and he reached out to me, and he said, can I do one of these with you? And we had such a great time, and we ended up doing a bunch of them together. And so I had him on as sort of like a quasi-irregular, and we just had a great time. And this is one of those internet relationships you have with someone where you never meet them, but you have a nice kinship with them. And so we had a good time. And I ended up calling him Dr. His name is Eric Miller. I ended up calling him Dr. Eric Miller, just as a nice tribute, calling him a doctor. He's not a doctor, but I called him doctor. So I used to even intro him as my guest, Dr. Eric Miller. And eventually, I didn't continue on with the Aftermash podcast. I gave up on it, which is very unlike me. As other people that follow my other shows know, when I start something, I finish the project. I very rarely bail on things midway through. But I bailed on that show. I don't remember why, but I did. I think I got frustrated with it or whatever. And I just stopped doing it, I think, around like season six or something. And I kept in touch with Eric over Facebook. He was around my age. And then I learned that he got very, very sick. And he had a brain tumor. And I tried to keep tabs with him, but of course he was offline for long periods of time. And eventually I learned that he passed away from this horrible thing that happened to him. And, you know, it was very upsetting. He's a young man. And it bothered me a lot. And his family, whether they didn't know how to take it down or they left it up or whatever, but one of the weird things that we deal with now in our modern society is when someone dies and like their social media is still going, it's a little weird because it's like this sort of zombie thing that keeps going on. But every year when Eric's birthday would come up on Facebook, it would pop up. It's Eric Miller's birthday. And I would go on and I would every year, I knew he wasn't seeing it, but every year I would post the screenshot from this episode of Hawkeye saying, Eddie, wherever you are, whether you know it or not, you did good. And I would post that every year for his birthday from many years later. And I meant to do it this year, except I now saw that his page is gone. So that means over the course of the last year, his family must have finally realized they didn't want it up and they took it down. So I'm never going to get a chance to do that again. So my favorite line from this episode, and part of the reason this episode is meaningful to me, is because of that quote. So my favorite line is, Eddie, wherever you are, whether you know it or not, you did good. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. But until then, that is all.